This is Audible.
Penguin Random House Audio presents Sadness, Love, Openness, The Buddhist Path of Joy by Chökyinma Rinpoche, read for you by Richard Gere. Deep sadness, because nothing lasts. Fervent love, because all beings are my beloved family. Lucid openness, because this ordinary mind is full awakening. Sheer joy, because all of this is true. Introduction. In Buddhism, gaining concrete first-hand experience with the instructions is paramount. If we are searching for freedom and awakening, treating topics such as impermanence and suffering, love and compassion, or insight into the nature of the mind as abstract concepts is not sufficient. The only way to truly understand these crucial points is through direct experience. Only then will the Dharma be applicable and truly effective. What are the experiences that the teachings of the Buddha are founded on? They are sadness, love, and openness. Although they appear to be quite different, sadness and openness are in fact intimately connected. The profound sadness that overwhelms us when we understand the impermanent nature of all phenomena opens us up to the world around us. We open our hearts and begin to notice our fellow beings. We see how we all must face the hardships of life. We understand the fleeting nature of our joys, and we become aware of how much worry, pain, and suffering we all go through in our lives. In this way, we realize that we all share similar painful experiences. Knowing what others go through and feel, we cannot help but sympathize with them, and the wish to help and protect our fellow beings naturally wells up in us. This wish to help and protect arises from love, and the more we open our eyes to others' suffering and delusion, the stronger our love becomes. Love clears the mind of the thick fog of desire, anger, and ignorance. Love is like the sun that burns through the fog, dissolving it until only vast openness and clarity remain. When nothing but boundless openness and lucidity remain, we come face to face with the basic nature of all phenomena beyond concepts. Still, as thoughts reemerge, the fog inevitably reappears. But now we know from our own experience that freedom and awakening are always right here within us. This realization gives rise to an indescribable joy. We have experienced for ourselves that awakening is a genuine option for us and for everyone else. How wonderful! The heartfelt wish that everyone may awaken to true freedom is born in us and consumes us to the point where our attachment and delusion seem to dissolve naturally. All the while, we see the world for what it is, utterly impermanent and painful, and our sadness grows ever more profound. Yet our sadness is now accompanied by genuine love and affection, and a deep sense of responsibility brought on by the certainty that if we simply stay on course, we will be able to make a true and lasting difference everywhere we go. This is how sadness, love, and openness sustain Dharma practitioners. Sadness. Setting out. We all know the importance of having the proper attitude when we begin a new project. This book is about the Dharma, the teachings of the Buddha. And when working with the Dharma, it's important to be motivated by a particular wish. It is important to feel that as we learn and train, we want the outcome to be useful and beneficial for everyone, for all beings. Therefore, at this point, it would be good to think like this. What I am about to do now is something that has the power to overcome all my negative emotions and confused thoughts. It will lead me along a path that leads from one joyful moment to another, the direct way to liberation and awakening. I want to share that joy with all beings. Thinking like this changes us right away. It calms us down and relaxes us. It makes us open up to others, and we begin to notice the sadness and pain that everyone carries with them. Such a mind that truly cares about the well-being and happiness of others is a beautiful garden where flowers of wisdom and insight can bloom. What we live for. Buddhism views this life as just one among many. This current life began when we were born, and it will end when one day we die. During this life, we rely on certain things to keep us from harm and to support us. As small children, we rely on our parents for safety and comfort. As we grow up, we go to school and receive an education, trusting that this will be good for us. When at some point we feel we have learned enough, we look for a job that can pay our bills and afford us entertainment and fun. We rely on all these things, along with our family, friends, possessions, and social standing, to give structure to our lives and make us happy. Actually, everything we do is motivated by the search for happiness. Nothing lasts. As we look for happiness, however, we often find that our situation ends up quite different from what we actually wanted. The reason we end up with that experience is that everything in this world occurs due to something else. In other words, nothing exists independently. Buddhism refers to this as conditioned existence, and conditioned existence is characterized by being impermanent. We may be very intelligent people who have accomplished a lot, or maybe we're just lucky and everything is naturally going our way. In any case, nothing stays the same, and sooner or later the winds of fortune shift. Suddenly we find ourselves in a radically different situation. Throughout it all, we keep getting older, and one day we will die and be no more. This may sound a bit harsh, but it's a simple fact of life. And if we are willing to face facts, we are already opening up to something that is much greater than our usual concerns. The meaning of life. We wish so much for our lives to be meaningful, and many of us think that a meaningful life is something we can work toward through certain events that we can experience, things we can acquire, or people we can meet. But what are we really looking for? What is actually achievable in this life? What do we get out of all the things we do? When this life is over, we can't take anything with us. Forget about money and possessions. We can't even bring the people we love the most. This life culminates in a forced and final separation from everything and everyone we have ever loved and held dear. We have pushed ourselves so hard to get something out of this life. We have been swimming in a sea of thoughts and ideas. And maybe we have achieved a lot. Maybe we have money in the bank. Perhaps we are popular and have plenty of friends and a loving family. But whatever we might have, we will have to bid it all farewell on the day death comes knocking on our door. Think carefully. Have you achieved everything you wanted? Is everything just the way it should be? If the answer is yes, then all is fine and well. But very few people are perfectly happy and content with their lives. To use a Tibetan expression, such people are as rare as stars in the daytime sky. Let's be honest, we all know the nagging feeling that something is missing, that things aren't as good as they should be, the feeling that our life should be better. Thoughts and emotions. The way our minds work makes it quite impossible to be content. We are controlled by our thoughts, which are restless. They're always fluctuating, never capable of resting in calmness, joy, and contentment, which are simply not in the nature of thoughts. There's always a nagging feeling that something's not good enough, a voice whispering to us that everything would be much better if only. Thinking automatically creates a perception of things as not being quite right. We're never truly at ease, because we remain incapable of appreciating the present moment just as it is. There's always something we wish for and something else we want to avoid. We keep shifting between hope and fear, which in turn create other emotions, emotions that can grow strong and destructive. Take attachment and aversion, for instance. When attachment and aversion begin to shape our consciousness, it is only a matter of time before they will drive us to act. Sooner or later, we will go for what we desire and try to avoid what we dislike. In fact, anything we think, say, or do is the expression of the emotions that roam about our consciousness. And such actions have consequences. When our minds are confused by thoughts and drunk on emotions, the results of our actions are going to be painful for ourselves and others. There's no other possible outcome. The nature of thoughts. This may sound strange, but even though our thoughts manifest in such negative ways and have such severe results, the true nature of thoughts is actually nothing but wisdom. Thoughts do not contain anything but wakefulness. That's what we need to realize. The Dharma is here to help us discover that the true nature of thoughts is nothing but wakefulness. This is the only way we can break through the deceptions of thought. In the end, this is the real reason that we receive instruction and try to comprehend what the Dharma is about. This is why we put the teachings into practice. This is why we meditate. If we allow our thoughts to keep acting as they do now, we will never find happiness in the present moment. We will always be running away from one thing and chasing another. Dharma practice is not a hobby. The Dharma warns us against the destructive power of our thoughts and teaches us how to recognize their true nature. It reveals what a thought actually is, wisdom and wakefulness. The Dharma invites us to discover the wisdom, compassion, and power that are intrinsic to our thinking. That's the purpose of Dharma practice, to enable us to recognize and familiarize ourselves with the true nature of thoughts. Eventually, we can become perfectly free and confident in our recognition. Therefore, it's important to realize that the Dharma is no hobby. It is crucial that we understand the purpose of the Dharma and know how to practice it correctly. The Dharma must become a real priority in our lives in order to truly cultivate this recognition. Worries. As things stand, nothing in this world makes any real sense or has any deeper meaning. Fame, status, power, money, however much we may have, it's all unsatisfying and fragile. We work so hard to get what we want, but when we finally achieve what we wish for, it's suddenly no longer all that exciting. We quickly feel bored and lose interest. Still, we lose sleep worrying about how to protect our investments while fantasizing about future achievements. The worries of those who have little to no possessions are usually limited to finding food and having a roof over their heads. Don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that poverty makes people content. I'm saying that the more we rely on external circumstances to make us happy, the more miserable we become. What good is material abundance if we are mentally impoverished? We need to feel happy, secure, prosperous, and at ease, but aren't those all primarily mental needs? True happiness comes from appreciating whatever we have and being less worried, less scared. Yet we're always on the lookout for something. That's the way it was when we were children, and we're still like that today. What is it we're really looking for? It's the feeling of success. But what does that even mean? And how do we get there? While we keep hoping, trying, working, and toiling, we also keep growing older, and one day our health begins to fail. The tragedy is that we never reach a point where we feel that we got what we wanted. Karma. Why would we need the Dharma? Why is it a good idea to study the teachings of the Buddha? Studying the Dharma is a good idea because we don't see things clearly the way they really are. Hour after hour, day after day, month after month, and year after year, we are constantly fooled by illusions. Nothing is the way it seems. Nothing lasts. Yet our experience nevertheless feels so real, and so we react with attachment, aversion, or indifference. Karma is action. Actions that we take that leave an imprint on us that determine our future experience. Whenever we like or sympathize with something or someone, this is a subtle form of negative karma. That's because liking something is a subtle aspect of attachment. And whenever we dislike or disagree with someone or something, this is a subtle form of negative karma. That's because not liking something is a form of aversion. The same goes for indifference. I don't care is basically an expression of ignorance. So it, too, is a subtle form of negative karma. If we check, it's easy to notice that our thoughts always take one of those three tracks. In short, things that actually aren't real attract us. But because we experience them as real, we also instinctively assume that they are here to stay. That's how our delusion works. The same applies to the things we don't like. Whenever we encounter someone or something we don't like, it feels so solid and real. Our feelings are intrusive and convincing. And so we never stop to consider whether our experience even reflects the way things actually are. Understanding Buddhism. People of other faiths are often quite knowledgeable about their religion, but sadly that's not always the case with Buddhists. To be honest, the majority of Buddhists don't know what Buddhism is really about. That is, what it all comes down to. Many people get caught up in ritual or philosophical details that are part of the whole enterprise, of course, but aren't in any way crucial to the heart of the tradition. In that way, Buddhism comes to appear very much like any other typical religion. Indeed, on the surface, what we do is not that different from people who follow other religions. We try to be nice and caring and good, and we may tell ourselves that this is basically what Buddhism is about. We believe in the Buddha, while others believe in God, Allah, or some other divinity, but basically it all amounts to the same thing. Actually, there are quite a few Buddhists who think like that. However, as modern and intelligent Buddhists of the 21st century, it is our responsibility to be fully aware of what Buddhism is really about. Why do we practice the Buddha's teachings? How do we practice them in the best, most effective way? And what is the net result? Very few people actually know the answers to these questions. Obviously, the way we behave is not unimportant. But for all Buddhist schools, the key issue has always been the understanding of two topics, the two truths and dependent origination. The two truths refer to ultimate truth and relative truth. The ultimate is the nature of reality, the way things actually are, while the relative is the way things appear to us, the way they seem to be. Dependent origination means that everything comes into being in dependence on something else. In other words, all existence is conditioned and contingent. Dependent origination is deep and complex. It's rare to meet people who truly understand it. Nonetheless, dependent origination lies at the very heart of the teachings of the Buddha. A famous Buddhist verse states, "All phenomena appear from causes. The Buddha has taught those causes, and also that which brings about their cessation. This is what the great mendicant has taught." So as modern intelligent Buddhists, it should be our goal to understand dependent origination. Why bother? Before we do anything else, we need to be clear about why we follow the teachings of the Buddha at all. We need to understand and experience for ourselves what Buddhism is really about, and we need to know what results we gain from our practice. The reason we study the teachings of the Buddha is that our perception is out of touch with reality, and our emotions cause pain for others and ourselves. And so we study the teachings of the Buddha because we want to stop being deluded. This is why we listen, reflect, and seek to gain practical experience with the Dharma. The result is ultimate awakening. Realizing the true nature of our thoughts, those very thoughts that otherwise chase us around, preventing us from seeing things the way they actually are. In their basic nature, our thoughts are wisdom, pure, non-conceptual wisdom. When we study and train in applying the teachings of the Buddha, it is for the purpose of directly experiencing this realization. Variations. All Buddhist schools agree that dependent origination is the pivotal point. In fact, if we have fully understood dependent origination, there isn't really anything left for us to understand. Everyone agrees on this. Still, The different schools explain dependent origination slightly differently. That is because people aren't all the same. The different traditions teach in their own specific ways so that everyone may find a means of understanding. It may be pithy and concise or complex and elaborate. While presentations and styles may differ in this way, the topic always remains the same. The way things appear through dependent origination and the true nature of that which appears. Practice is a must. Unless we practice the teachings through study, reflection, and meditation, we are stuck in the rut of being controlled by our thoughts and habits. The way we think of and perceive the world is mistaken. Our consciousness is structured such that no matter how carefully we may think, no matter how hard we may try to grasp the world around us, the conclusion we arrive at is always different from what things are actually like. And it is our acting upon this mistaken perception that leads to suffering. Thinking, emotion, and action. Our uncontrolled thoughts prevent us from feeling content and at ease in the present moment. We constantly get the sense that there's something else to do and achieve, something other than what is here right now. There's always something we want to go for, and something we're trying to avoid. Pressure builds, and once we give in, we behave in ways that are regrettable, both for others and for ourselves. Whether subtle or crude, our greed and anger keep spawning new feelings and thoughts, and so matters keep complicating. For example, we might begin to think of ourselves as very special, and so develop an unhealthy type of pride. That conceit and self-cherishing can fill us with jealousy and envy, making us unable to feel happy when things go well for others. Such a frame of mind is unwholesome now and destructive in the long run. Attachment, aversion, and ignorance. Our thoughts, feelings, and ideas about the world are all cogs in the machinery that make up our thinking mind. Even when we just simply like something, we're already busy building up desire. On the other hand, whenever there's something we dislike, we're already involved with a subtle form of aversion. Finally, whenever we don't care and just don't want to bother, we're feeding our dullness and ignorance. In the end, no matter how we think and what we may think of, there are only those three options: liking, disliking, and not wanting to bother. We should also remember that the ultimate source of both attachment and aversion is ignorance. All of them feed our deluded consciousness, so we can be certain that the future will bring even more confusion and that our negative emotions will become more overwhelming than they are now. Attachment, aversion, and ignorance make suffering a sure thing. The more negative emotions we develop based on these, the more miserable our experience of the world will be. Buddhist cosmology speaks of infernal realms where the manifestation of suffering is excruciating and completely overwhelming. On the other hand, it is said that if we keep generating positive thoughts, we will sooner or later experience realms with divine pleasures. Yet none of those states endures. They all are temporary. Like everything else produced by causes and conditions, heavenly states are impermanent. As long as our actions and thoughts depend on attachment, aversion, and ignorance, we are bound to suffer. The optimal point of departure. Our task as Buddhists is to break free from the circle of life that involves ignorance and suffering. The good news is that our current situation as humans offers a unique opportunity to do just that. How? Buddhist cosmology describes three types of existence, also known as realms: the desire realm, the form realm, and the formless realm. As humans, we are born in the desire realm, and here we will automatically experience much suffering and crude negative emotions. That is not the case with those who are born in a divine abode in the form realm or the formless realm. But no matter how gorgeous and delightful the higher divine states may seem, the ideal realm for profound and effective practice is that of humans. Our human body is subject to the influence of the elements, and our consciousness experiences all sorts of negative emotions. However, If we receive powerful instructions on the way to actualize wisdom, we will soon be able to manifest a wide range of the wonderful qualities of awakening. In a divine state, such a thing doesn't happen. The body and mind of a god may seem far more splendid and magnificent, but in terms of awakening from ignorance, they are not ideal. That's why we really could not be in a more fortunate situation than this. As humans in this world, we have everything it takes. But still, we have to seize the opportunity and accept the challenge. Otherwise, we'll just stagger along in confusion and misery. And when one day this life is over, we'll proceed to even more ignorance and suffering. In short, our future well-being hinges on our learning to apply the instructions. Hope and fear. Why do we suffer? We suffer because of hope and fear. Wherever there is hope and fear, suffering follows automatically. When we are unable to appreciate what we have here and now, we keep hoping for something else. At the same time, we fear the unknown. We suffer because nothing is certain. We can never know for sure what's going to happen next. We don't even know what will happen 5 minutes from now. A lack of love. We live in a time when many teenagers are depressed and feel their lives are empty and meaningless. Some even go so far as to take their own lives. Others numb their pain with drugs and alcohol. The problem is not that they lack education or resources, but they are nevertheless deeply unhappy. Other kids act out their feelings by becoming cold and uncaring. Here, modern technology definitely carries part of the blame. Technology is useful, but it can also do much harm, as when computer games turn violence into entertainment. In any case, at the root of all this is confusion. And where does this confusion come from? It comes from a lack of love. Shallowness. We must take care not to become shallow people. Religion can easily turn into a sort of entertainment, a way to socialize and make new friends. Some cozy feeling of community mixed with a dash of faith, a ritual here and there, and some nice tunes to sing along the way. If that's our approach to religion, then whatever we do is going to be rather superficial, and we will lose any real sense of what our religion is about. This sort of thing also happens in Buddhist circles. Of course, that doesn't mean we should just forget about our temples, texts, images, special garments, rosaries, and the like, but it is important to remember that all those things are secondary. Be aware. Being aware from moment to moment is key. That will give us so much opportunity. Buddhism has a lot of techniques, it is vast and logical, and its wisdom is razor sharp. We're getting everything we could possibly ask for and then some. In fact, we may be somewhat spoiled, because sadly the practice and the practitioner often remain separate. And that's not how it's supposed to be. The practice and the practitioner should click and become one. Genuine practice is not rigid or fanatical. Genuine practice means being aware from moment to moment. The goal is to become calmer, kinder, more accommodating, more at ease, and more intelligent. It's all very logical. Stuck on the surface. When we remember what Buddhism is fundamentally about, we will also become serious about our practice. We need to know the purpose and the importance of the things we do. Otherwise, it's easy to get caught up in a lot of details that actually aren't important at all. Genuine practice is not just thinking that Buddhism is interesting or reading books and listening to talks to acquire new knowledge. Genuine practice is not about exotic, colorful rituals either. Genuine practice is not a matter of knowing the right way to prepare a Buddhist shrine. It's not a matter of dress, and it's not a matter of knowing what to say or how to behave. But it's easy to get caught up in all those things. It's easy to miss the sense of what really matters. Don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that it's bad if we know how to prepare a shrine. Indeed, it's a very good thing to know. But it's important that we don't get too caught up in the details and stuck on the surface of things. Our practice is authentic when we have a clear sense of the crucial points and never forget them. a balancing act. Figuring out the way to practice isn't difficult at all. When we listen to a talk or read a text and then give some thought to what we learn, it's all very clear and logical. If we are genuinely interested, it isn't hard to understand. The difficult part is taking to heart what we learn. But that's not because the instructions themselves are very demanding. We won't be subjected to a lot of hardships and trials. Instead, Buddhism is about achieving balance. The Buddha kept emphasizing that we need to find a good balance between rigid austerity and our thirst for enjoyments and satisfaction. It's about finding a balance between these two extremes. That's all there is to it. Growing up, why is it so difficult for us to apply the teachings? Something must be holding us back, preventing us from making progress. Let's imagine that this something is an especially profound and impenetrable obstacle. In that case, our lack of progress could be conveniently excused, but really, there's nothing very profound about what's holding us back. Our minds are immature and childish, that's all. We are not mature, so our experiences keep deceiving us. The good news is that as soon as we realize that we are immature, we no longer are. We won't be fooled anymore. Two paths. For many people, studying and reflecting are the two main ways to a deeper understanding of the Buddhist view. One may read Buddhist books, attend public seminars and teachings on Buddhist thought, and reflect on the truths that they convey. But there is also a third approach, another path that goes a step further. Here, one forms a personal relationship with an experienced and realized teacher who knows the student well and who is aware of what level he or she is at. Such a teacher can provide his or her students with the right kind of instruction and guide them all the way to awakening, step by step. Knowing such a master and maintaining a close relationship with him or her is a rare and extremely fortunate situation. These days, it can be difficult for people to arrange their lives so that they can stay near a teacher of that kind. But the fact remains that while studying and reflecting are excellent, they are not enough. We need actual first-hand experience with what the teachings talk about. Nowadays, masters are offering online courses that allow everyone to receive authentic and effective guidance in meditation practice. Studying and reflecting are excellent, but they're not enough. We need actual first-hand experience through meditation. Merit. Why don't more people take the opportunity to follow a program that combines study and practical training? The reason is that something is required. That requirement is merit, which is the result of positive actions done in the past. For example, we possess merit if in a previous life we formed a sincere wish to study the teachings of the Buddha. Apart from that, encountering the Dharma doesn't simply happen by coincidence or a stroke of luck. That's not how it works. Things won't happen before we are ready. It takes a lot of merit and fortunate circumstances. The message is as clear as day, and once we start practicing, we quickly notice the results. Why then isn't Buddhism more popular? Why aren't there more people who practice? We humans are intelligent, and we value education and the ability to think clearly and logically. We also have all sorts of aids and appliances to help us along the way. In that light, one would expect everyone to be busy learning about the Dharma and how to apply the instructions. But things just don't work that way. Discovering and benefiting from the teachings of the Buddha is the culmination of a process of mental development that has evolved over countless lifetimes. In Buddhism, we call this process accumulating merit. Religion and materialism. Why do we suffer? We suffer because of fear and doubt. For protection, we then turn to education, money, and religion. Before, people depended on a religion to give meaning and direction in their lives. These days, people often rely on a materialist worldview, the view that reality comes down to matter to give them clarity and guidance. Whether the framework we rely on is religious or materialist, the basic sense of dependency is the same. We feel that there is something beyond us that everything ultimately stands and falls with. Delusion. It's crucial that we understand why Dharma is important and why practice is necessary. Without the Dharma, we are fooled by our thoughts and experiences. Without the Dharma, we will never be able to look beyond the surface of things. Without the Dharma, our outlook, the way we perceive the world and its inhabitants, as well as ourselves and our feelings, remains superficial. Our suffering, our happiness, and all our other experiences we may have, none of it has any basis in reality. But the truth of this escapes us because we are ignorant of the impermanent and dependent nature of all phenomena. In short, there is a fundamental discrepancy between our perception of reality and the way things actually are. We suffer from delusions about everything. We sleepwalk through life, clueless about what's going on around us and where we are heading. The purpose of the Dharma is to enable us to break free from such a way of life through the cultivation of wisdom. Two kinds of knowledge. One of the many meanings of the word Dharma is phenomenon, meaning something that can be experienced. In other words, when we want to study the Dharma, we have a wish to learn about all that can be experienced in terms of both the way things appear to us and the way they actually are. Knowing how things really are is obviously the most important. If we are only aware of the way things seem to be, we will never understand what is actually the case. That sort of understanding will always be superficial. In short, if insight and wisdom are to unfold, we have to take into account both the way things appear and how they are in reality. In this context, Buddhism introduces many concepts and categories concerning the way we sentient beings are built and how we function. We learn about the different elements that constitute our body and consciousness, the nature of our experiences, and what it means for something to exist, how things occur in dependence on causes and conditions, and so on. Many of these topics are straightforward and not that hard to understand. Everything is possible. Certain topics in Buddhism, however, are not within the reach of our immediate experience or capacity for rational inquiry. They are matters that only an awakened mind, a Buddha mind, can fully comprehend. A good example is karmic cause and effect. Which actions produce which results? Nevertheless, in the context of karma, we can still draw on our own experience. If we think of our own experiences of sadness and joy, happiness and suffering, there doesn't seem to be any limit to how good or how awful things can get. We can also see that none of our perceptions last. Everything keeps changing. What exists in one moment may no longer be there in the next, and consequently the situation has changed completely. We can learn a lot from paying attention to our experience. It's not hard to see that it must be possible to experience the world in ways that are radically different from our present experience. For example, in a godlike state, one perceives everything as heavenly beauty and bliss, while others may be trapped in a hellish state of pain and suffering. Our minds have the potential for all sorts of experiences. In short, the subtler teachings of Buddhism can be approached through relying on a combination of scripture and investigation of our own experience. How do we see the world? We experience the world around us as real and lasting. The things we perceive out there appear to really be there, seemingly enduring through time. But the world actually is not as it appears. Nothing lasts for more than an instant. Everything changes from moment to moment, and yet we still think that our perceptions are real and genuine. The more we get stuck in that way of thinking, the stronger our negative emotions will grow. And the more those emotions take charge, the harder and more painful life becomes. In other words, our problems arise because we perceive the world and beings as enduring and independent. That's a distorted perspective, and it tricks us. How then can we change our perspective? How can we move on? We may work hard at improving our thoughts and emotions, but as long as the framework for that is a consciousness that is fundamentally deluded, we won't find any lasting solution to our troubles. What can help us? We need a radical solution, something that can cut through our experience of a real and lasting world. The problem is ignorance, which manifests as our continuous distinction between self and other, and our belief that both are solid, lasting, and real. And this ignorance resides within us. That's why we need to find the solution within ourselves. The dualistic split in consciousness, which creates all the trouble, can be cured only by its complete opposite. The remedy, therefore, is non-dual awareness, which is actually already present within us right now, in this very moment, even though we fail to see it. We don't realize what we already have. Please understand this. The root of all our problems is within ourselves. But so is the perfect solution. It's our minds that create our delusions and negative emotions. And the solution, the antidote, that which is utterly beyond delusion, negative emotions, suffering, and all dualistic constructs, is also present in our own mind right now. And that's what Buddhism is really about. Solving the problem by realizing the solution within. There are lots of things we can do to reach that point. For example, we can train to become better at giving and sharing. Giving and sharing. Whenever we don't feel like sharing with others, we are narrowing the scope of our minds. Stinginess makes us feel tense and unnatural. It's painful to be that way. Our lives become rigid. On the other hand, whenever we're able to share with others or give something away, this immediately frees the mind. It's almost like magic. Sharing and giving create an immediate sense of spaciousness, joy, and freedom. In fact, the mere intention to share is as powerful as the act itself. There is a meditation practice known as giving and taking. In this meditation, we mentally give away all our most cherished possessions and accomplishments, offering them to all beings. At the same time, we take upon ourselves all their problems, all their sadness, confusion, and suffering. This is a very powerful practice. If we engage in it sincerely and with an open mind, we naturally develop all the wonderful qualities that come with being generous. Training in that kind of exchange will enable us to realize the nature of reality and the wisdom that lies at the core of our being. On the other hand, the less we're able to share and to give, the harder it is to realize the nature of all phenomena and the more painful living becomes. But as our stinginess wanes, we become more flexible and carefree. Life becomes easier and we find ourselves less confused. Quite naturally, our minds brighten. It all comes down to applying the right methods. Skillful use of the right methods yields tangible results, and generosity is just such a method. Letting go. Another powerful method is to cut the ties that usually bind us. Whenever you feel there's something you absolutely must get your hands on, or something you couldn't possibly bear to lose, just try letting it go. Release it instead of holding on. Letting go is wholesome and healing. Instead of hanging on to all sorts of ideas about what it takes to be happy, just let it go. Be generous. Try to let go right now, in this very moment. The benefits reveal themselves immediately. As soon as we let go of the things we hanker after and set them free without holding on to anything, we experience freedom and joy that are unmediated and real. Impermanence teaches us to let go. The ability to let go comes naturally when we begin to challenge our perception of the world as real and lasting. The world is impermanent. One day, everything we know will be gone. That's simply how it is. Everything ends and ceases to be. Deep down, we know this already. We just don't like to think about it. But in fact, everything changes from one moment to the next. All the things we name and label, the things we like or dislike, don't actually exist as something unchanging and independent of circumstances. When we take a closer look, we find that none of the things we take to be real actually exist. If we think well and apply reason, this is something we can figure out quite quickly. But our intellectual understanding must turn into actual experience. Otherwise, even though we understand intellectually that everything is unreal, we continue to feel that things are real and solid. Instead, we need to recognize that these perceptions are just that, perceptions, and they don't reflect the way things actually are. When thinking makes sense, we have to start thinking in a more meaningful way, then we'll automatically move in the right direction. Meaningful thinking means taking to heart that nothing lasts and nothing is as we perceive. And it means reminding ourselves again and again that this is how it is. We can make great progress doing this by coming to understand the impermanent and illusory nature of everything. We slowly but surely set ourselves free, even if our understanding is actually the product of conceptions and therefore not yet born out of direct personal experience. What does it mean to become free? In this context, it means that we gradually weaken the power our emotions have over us. When we're no longer so rigidly controlled by our emotions, we no longer experience the same degree of despair and misery when things don't work out as planned. In short, thinking and reflecting in meaningful ways produces many substantial results. The threefold perspective. The Vajra vehicle, as the Tantric Buddhist teachings are called, speaks of a threefold perspective, which is a particular view of the world. In this context, we cultivate an attitude that transforms our ordinary perceptions into enlightened or divine expressions. All visual appearances are regarded as pure. Everything we hear is the sound of mantra or divine sound, and all of our thoughts and emotions are perceived as expressions of wisdom. That's how one is supposed to go through life as a practitioner of the Vajra vehicle. This can be a difficult attitude to maintain, so there is also a simpler alternative, which is to remember impermanence and the illusory nature of all things. No matter what we experience, we must recall that it is all impermanent and unreal. Whenever we bring to mind impermanence and the illusory nature of all phenomena, we're following in the footsteps of the Buddha. Then we're on the right track. We need to open up and become aware of all the good qualities that we already possess. Studying. The great Indian master Nagarjuna said that Buddhist teachings are always based on two kinds of truth, the relative and the ultimate. If no one had ever told us that there are two types of truth, we would probably never think that life could be more than the way it appears. That shows how important it is to study the words of the Buddha and reflect on their meaning. But studying and reflecting is not enough. We need to arrive at a direct and personal experience. Experience. It is with experience that meditation becomes important. Because only through direct experience can liberation become an actual possibility, and meditation is the gateway to experience. Therefore, Buddhist practice has three aspects: studying, reflecting, and meditating. Meditation can take many forms. If our goal is to understand the relative and the ultimate truths, then our practice certainly doesn't have to be confined to our meditation cushion. There are many different methods available to us. The methods differ widely, and the results also tend to differ significantly from person to person. Meditating while thinking. There is, however, one particular method that benefits everyone alike, acknowledging that nothing lasts. We instinctively feel that things are going to stay more or less the same, and that the people around us will remain, but that's not the case. If we can, we should try our best to understand that things really aren't the way they seem at all. But if that seems a bit far off at first, it's still very good to give some thought to the impermanence of things. Even if we just take a quick look around, it's easy to prove the truth of impermanence. So first we must acknowledge that things don't last. Then we need to bring that understanding to mind again and again, until we deeply understand that everything is impermanent and transient. That is a genuine Buddhist meditation. These days, a lot of people associate meditation with sitting on a cushion, feeling calm and relaxed, So perhaps it sounds a bit strange that reflecting on impermanence can be a meditation. But across all Buddhist traditions, observing the impermanent nature of all phenomena is an important contemplative practice. The impact. What happens when we reflect on the impermanent nature of all things? What happens when we really take to heart the fact that everything we are fond of, everything we consider important and meaningful, is going to be lost? What happens when we understand that no matter how well we take care of ourselves, one another, or the whole world for that matter, it's just a question of time before we will have to say goodbye to it all? When we clearly understand that that's how life is, when we actually get that, then we will find ourselves overwhelmed by a deep sadness, a sorrow more heartbreaking than anything we've ever known, but this impact is necessary. The gift of sadness. Reflecting on impermanence is not meant to make us miserable, but without that sorrow of knowing nothing will last, we'll never get anywhere on our path. Sadness makes it possible for us to gain something that is much more precious than anything we could imagine. That's why we must contemplate impermanence. If there were nothing to gain, it would be foolish to think about these things. We would just be making ourselves miserable for no reason. But there's a deep meaning to it all when it dawns on us what the world is actually like, and we are consequently struck by overwhelming sadness, the next step comes naturally. We draw the logical conclusion that all things are impermanent and begin training in letting go. Becoming realistic. Gradually, we are able to let go of all the things we used to chase after blindly, all the things that used to bind us and control us. We develop that ability through a discernment that we normally don't possess. Instinctively, we begin to let go, because now we know. Whether we like it or not, sooner or later, we will be forced to let everything go. So when we know this, it makes perfect sense to lessen our clinging now. Unless we take impermanence into account, we will just continue holding on to things, which in the end will only bring us pain and deprive our lives of meaning. On the other hand, if we have really understood that nothing lasts and everything is unreal and illusory, then letting go is easy. Actually, it happens by itself without effort. Reflecting on the impermanent and illusory nature of all things is a very powerful practice. Fresh eyes. Understanding impermanence is no magical feat, but it dramatically, almost magically, changes our experience of the world. It makes us capable of actions that used to be impossible. We begin to look at our world and ourselves from a completely new perspective, and that profound shift in outlook is actually at the heart of all Dharma practice. In fact, we can measure our spiritual progress by how often we remember that all conditioned phenomena are impermanent. For the most accomplished practitioners, this happens quite spontaneously. They have already then let go. Waking up. We begin to awaken, thinking, I'm fooling myself. The way I experience the world and those around me, the way I experience my emotions and myself, is all wrong, and it's painful. All the stuff that I worry about, the things I must have, the things I cannot bear to lose, the things I try to avoid, it all just keeps me trapped. When I see things in that confused way, it has nothing to do with how they actually are. Moreover, since I am doing this to myself, I am only causing my own suffering. How sad and meaningless. Breaking free. We then commit ourselves to breaking free of this outlook. I'm done. From now on, I want to see things for what they really are. I won't be a slave to my own delusions anymore. I know my perception of the world is completely out of touch with reality. All my daydreams and fantasies, all my worries and fears, they are all trivial and pointless. As we think in this way, our wish to be free grows stronger. The power of that wish then transforms into a key that unlocks Buddhism's vast treasury of methods and instructions. Opening up. When we realize that everything is impermanent and unreal, we open up to the pain and suffering of others. That is how love and compassion become heartfelt and genuine. No matter how many praises we sing of love and compassion, such qualities won't awaken and flourish unless we acknowledge impermanence. From sadness to strength. So many wonderful qualities are already present within us, just waiting to be discovered. The key lies in understanding that things are impermanent and unreal. Sadness, of course, is not an end in itself, but deep sorrow comes with realizing that everything we previously took to be lasting and real is actually just about to disappear, and it never even existed in the first place. Such sadness and disillusionment have a wonderful effect. Sorrow makes us let go. As we stop chasing futile and ultimately painful goals, we embark on the spiritual path with superior strength and resolve. The healing power of the Dharma. Listening to the Dharma changes us. We begin to feel a profound joy, but we are also struck by tremendous sadness at our confusion and the uncertainty of our situation. So our hearts are heavy, but at the same time we feel that we need not despair because we have at long last found something that is truly useful and beneficial. The Dharma heals. It is the best medicine. And the more we take that medicine, the more our trust in its wonderful properties will grow. With each passing day, our appreciation of the Buddha's teachings increases as our mind begins to change. That is what it's like to be directly introduced to the impermanent nature of all things. The realization hits us hard and brings us abruptly out of our sleep. The facts are painful at first, but sadness gives way to a dawning clarity. Moved by deep joy, we think, "Finally, I have a sense of what it's all about. This change in me is enormous. Now I know how to eradicate confusion and suffering. I know how to be free. I feel so rich, and the road lies open before me. How wonderful." Maturing. When embarking on the path of Dharma, the mind shifts back and forth between joy and sadness. However, this process gradually matures the mind and makes us flexible, just like a child growing up. But if we really want to leave our spiritual childhood behind, the instructions have to hit home. It's only when they pierce our heart that things begin to happen. Up and down. Usually it doesn't take much, in fact, it takes almost nothing for us to lose our grip. If we become just a little bit well-known, or if people begin to praise us, we are in heaven right away. When we have money, we feel so cool and unbeatable. When life is good, there's no end to how great we feel. But if suddenly things begin to hurt a bit, we feel as if our life is no longer worth living. When depressed, we feel like total failures, complete losers. Without social status, fame, and money, we just can't take it, until the tide changes and we once again feel on top of the world. We could call this moodiness, but it's actually more like a bipolar disorder. One moment we're up in the clouds, the next we are heading for the gloomy pits. When things go our way, we become manic. Yes, life is awesome, I am awesome. But really, what is so awesome? Everything and everyone might cease to be at any moment, but still, right now we feel that it is all great and awesome. Then, when our mania fades, we despair, and life just isn't worth living. Until we reach awakening, we will keep shifting back and forth between mania and depression. There's no way around it. We know the characteristics of mania and depression, and we know their shortcomings. But when our emotions tighten their grip on us, it's almost impossible not to be carried away. Love and insight. Only love and insight will remedy this. Love and insight are characteristics of a mature mind, and we can grow up only by taking to heart the painful truth of impermanence. As long as we have not acknowledged the impermanent nature of things, we continue to be fickle and unreliable. The encounter with impermanence awakens us abruptly, but until that happens, we're like passed out drunks. The awareness of impermanence gets us going and makes us progress. For a Dharma practitioner, there's no greater inspiration than impermanence. Tame your mind. We have highlighted the importance of understanding that nothing lasts. The world we live in, our own body, and any amount of money, possessions, fame, and the like, everything will